Welcome to The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter. We are committed to bringing you the day's most important news and current affairs stories from an LGBTI perspective. If it matters to the LGBTI community, we will cover it. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email onair at joy.org.au or follow us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
It's Wednesday, the 11th of October. I'm Daniel Roberts and welcome to The Informer. Tonight, we're talking bullying, online and in the schoolyard. Why are some of us susceptible to bullies? Why are some of us bullies? And what resources are available if we need help?
Well, it would have started when I was just in high school, for year 7. I hadn't had any real experience in any experience with bullying before that. Well, it would have started when I was just in high school, so year 7. I hadn't had any real experience in any experience with bullying before that. I don't remember how it started. Just I'm guessing I said something silly or a bit childish, and then it got picked up once you get a reputation for being a joke or a loser. It snowballs and it just continued. You know, you're 7, you're 8, you're 9. A lot of physical bullying. But yeah, they also got cyberbullying. There was a Stubbs hate club on, I think, Bebo. If I was walking around and I heard a group of people laughing, I'd start having an anxiety attack. Not that I knew back then what it was, but I'd panic because there was laughter and I thought it was me. So I'd start hyperventilating and freaking out. I'm not a particularly aggressive person at all, but I remember when I'd come home and I'd just be so overwhelmed with everything and I'd go and just punch my garage wall and old fibro thing, just destroy it because I didn't know how to deal with all those emotions.
That was James talking about his experiences of being bullied on a video series published by ReachOut.com. We'll be hearing more of those stories throughout tonight's episode. According to the National Centre Against Bullying, 27% of Australian students are bullied every few weeks or more often. 1 in 7 children are cyberbullied often, and 13.5% of students report having rumours spread about them. Those stats to me seemed like a lot, but for my guests tonight, I'm sure they are unfortunately pretty standard. Joining me in the studio tonight is CEO of the Ilana and Madeline Foundation, Leslie Podesta, and on the phone from Headspace, Senior Clinical Advisor Nick Deegan. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you both here. Nick, I'm going to start with you, wherever you are on the phone out there. Nick, is bullying innate within all of us? Something I've been wondering about as I've been researching this. If someone is being bullied repeatedly, if someone is being a bully repeatedly, do you think that's something that they're aware of? And do you think they're aware of the pain they're causing?
So that's a really interesting question. I don't think people are, so it's certainly not innate. Like, these sorts of things are learnt through the experiences that people have in the environment around them. It is incredibly complex, and there are lots of reasons why somebody might bully. Some of them do include maybe a sense of powerlessness or a low sense of self-esteem within the person who is doing the bullying, or maybe they've experienced bullying or violence in their world around them somewhere. Other kind of reasons might be that maybe they get a sense of peer pressure, or there's a sense in them that they need to fit in, and as a way to try and fit in, they might undertake some bullying behaviour. It also might be because of exposure to bullying in the media and some sort of copycat thing that goes on there. So I'm certainly not at all trying to excuse the behaviour of those who are bullying, because the impacts, as we'll talk about over the next half hour, are significant and wide-reaching. However, in terms of trying to understand, our best opportunity to respond effectively to those who bully is to understand what's going on for them to empower us to respond in a way that's effective.
Leslie, is it safe to say that the line between bully and victim is quite clear-cut? Why do some kids get bullied and others don't?
That's a big question, Dan. And there's no one straightforward answer. I agree with Nick. A lot of what we talk about when we talk about bullying is about the whole concept of social inclusion. And I don't mean necessarily social inclusion from the whole society level. I talk about social inclusion within the ecosystem of which where kids are living, within their social or peer group or within their school or their classroom or their sports team. And we know that one of the factors that significantly contributes to bullying behavior is when children feel in some way that they're excluded from a group, and that part of the way to find inclusion is to isolate someone else. So there's definitely a social context for all of the type of bullying behavior that we see within most of childhood, particularly in early childhood. It's about children particularly feeling left out and wanting to find their way into a group.
At the Alana Madeline Foundation, you do a lot of work with online bullying. Could you explain what online bullying is? It's, I guess I'm of the generation that maybe we kicked it off in a way, you know, MSN Messenger and all that. But I have a feeling that social online platforms have changed, and it's not as simple as adults might understand it. Maybe reacting with an angry emoji face or disliking someone's comment. It seems heavier than that. Could you explain that a bit more?
I also wanted to say, I'm going to answer that. Mm-hmm. It's Cyberbullying Awareness Month.
It is.
And it's been interesting and to read the media over the last day or so. Did you know that Monica Lewinsky just kicked off a campaign in the US around raising awareness of cyberbullying? And it was very interesting to see her perception on this, because, of course, when the terrible awful shaming happened to Monica, it wasn't on a social media platform. It was prior to social media, but it was carried out within the media. I think it's very interesting that someone who wasn't the victim of cyberbullying associates so clearly with what happens around cyberbullying. But if we look at, going back to your specific question, if we look at what is cyberbullying, it's an awareness that there is a kind of a growing epidemic that impacts more than 15 to 20% of particularly teenagers. The Center for Disease Control in the US is really clear on this. We've got an ongoing issue that's affecting young people throughout our community. And really it's about targeting another person through the use of technology, and that's including social media, texting and other online programs. So it's not just one form, it's using digital communication in a way that can isolate, torment, hurt and distress another person. And it's really important to note that when we talk about bullying, we don't talk about it being as the once-off activity. That's a little bit different. That can be an act of aggression or an act of dislike. Bullying is very much around ongoing and repeated behaviours.
Nick, what's your experience with cyberbullying? And what would you say to someone that does feel like they are being cyberbullied?
So our experience with cyberbullying at Headspace is that we are certainly aware that it's having a significant impact on the health and wellbeing of Australians right across the spectrum. So I'd certainly reiterate the thoughts, the sentiments echoed earlier. But to add to that, the problem with cyberbullying is that often there is no respite or safe place, because we may be in the safety of our own homes or in our bedroom or maybe online playing a game. And it's that vulnerability that comes with that there is kind of sometimes no escape from it. Mm. That can be incredibly overwhelming for people who are experiencing the bullying. Mm. And so it means that services like Headspace, and I mean, we just developed some resources for sexting and image-based abuse, and we were working with the eSafety Commissioner. And it means that policymakers, that organisations like Headspace, that politicians and the cyber community is really having to evolve rapidly to try to come up with effective ways to support young people and people in general who are experiencing this kind of distress. And some additional research that was kind of done recently was trying to explore what are the motivators for trolls and other online bullies who are undertaking this kind of repetitive actions that are aimed to deliberately impact on somebody. And a large part of what they found reinforced that type of behaviour was a pushback online from those that was experiencing the trolling or the abuse. And so although it's kind of counterintuitive, it might seem that, you know, it's really important to stand up for yourself, and it is. In some way, that kind of clarity is blurred in the online world because it's more anonymous, it can be more anonymous, and so the pushback can, in a way, reinforce the bullying behaviour from the person doing the bullying. So, again, that makes it a more complex space to respond effectively in, but in terms of trying to tackle this and produce some resources that we've got on our website, Headspace has developed some specific resources for those who are experiencing online bullying. And one of the recommendations, the first actually, is to not respond to the person who is doing the cyberbullying, and it's certainly to involve your community of safe, trusted people, whether that be your parent or a sibling or a wider family network or friends or teacher or another trusted adult that's in your world. So to try and get support and advice from them, to block the person if that's able to happen doing the abuse, to change privacy settings, to delete maybe the current online account if it's really ongoing and repetitive abuse. Other things is to work with family and friends on how you can more actively follow up formal reporting to authorities, and there are some other links on our website that can help direct people to do that. And if it's helpful to kind of keep the evidence of some of this online bullying behaviour so that can be used some prosecutions go on down the track.
Great. So we've just heard from Nick about what Headspace does or has on offer for people who are suffering from being cyberbullied. Next up, we're going to talk about shame. First, we're going to hear some more from Reach Out.
This is The Informer, Joy's nightly news and current affairs program. We want to hear from you. Join the conversation, SMS us on 0427JOY949, email on air at joy.org.au, or add us on Twitter at The Informer Joy.
I grew up in Tamworth, and I went to school in smaller regional areas, so Nimbingar, Katingal, they're on the outskirts, quite small populations. I've been bullied since I was in kindergarten all the way to year 11. I had people calling me a witch and that kind of thing. Quite a large majority of my class weren't very nice to me. It was upsetting at the time, and it does make you feel horrible and like you're not, you know, worth being this person. The hardest part was, for me, was feeling different and feeling hopeless and worthless and as though I wasn't worth anything at the time because I didn't fit into the narrative that was my typical high school experience.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy, and tonight we're talking bullying on and offline. My guests tonight are Leslie Podesta from the Alana and Madeline Foundation and Nick Deegan from Headspace. Leslie, let's talk about shame. And there's a lot of shame that comes part and parcel with being bullied. Shame is an extremely strong emotion and is often linked with an understanding that we've done something wrong. So as a victim someone who is being bullied might often think that it's their fault because of the shame that they feel around being bullied. Do you think that's sort of why sometimes this becomes a secret?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's heartbreaking, isn't it, when you hear the vignettes. And obviously at Alana and Madeline, we spend a lot of time with schools and we talk to parents and students and teachers about this. And the torment that comes from repeated bullying is extremely distressing. There's no question that one of the impacts of ongoing and repeated bullying is a sense of strong social rejection and that you are disliked. And one of the things that we know happens when you feel socially rejected is you have a number of different responses to that, and that can be to be more extreme and to withdraw even more, or to try to hit back. And I agree completely that online you don't retaliate. It's not worth feeding the trolls. But for young people particularly who have been bullied at school, very often the response is to internalize that and to feel that it must be about them, and as we see often to then result in very self-destructive behavior themselves. So, you know, it's really important that particularly in schools that we build empathy skills with young people, and we build very high levels of awareness by teachers of what's happening in classrooms and in playgrounds. One of the messages that we talk about is that bullying is the child's problem but the adult's responsibility. And that's, you know, that's, it's self-obvious, isn't it? If you are the person who is the victim of repeated teasing, exclusion, hurt, you're not going to be in a strong position to be able to respond. And one of the things we know is that school is an important part of the social structure around young people's lives, where we've got to be sensitive and aware of what's happening within the social milieu and not just within the classroom. So there's a number of things that teachers can do to become much more self-aware about social connections and looking for patterns of behaviour and interventions to be able to change that. And really importantly, it's reaching out and listening.
Nick, what do you think about that sentiment that the bullying is about the children, but it is the adult's responsibility?
It's absolutely an adult's responsibility to tackle this issue more systematically, and so it's not helpful to look at resilience within a young person just in terms of what they may be born with or what they've got, and that's a finite amount. The resilience of a young person and their capacity to handle adversity and respond to it effectively is the responsibility of the world around them. It's the responsibility of the experiences their parents give them, the inclusion from sporting groups or other community groups, and it's also the responsibility of the school. So there's been lots of research done on the experience of young people in schools that have varying degrees of policies or parent inclusion in bullying frameworks, and overwhelmingly the evidence tells us that in school, so this is actually, I'll just reference the research from Writing Themselves In, which is coordinated by GLHV and La Trobe University. And so it was identified that in schools where they have specific policies addressing homophobia and discrimination and respecting sexual diversity and inclusion, the young people in those schools have far better outcomes. They have much lower experiences of bullying. They have far greater participation in all forms of curricular and extracurricular activities. And also I'll add that in other research conducted by the World Health Organization, they identified that the inclusion of families with the school management system in coming together to make a joint kind of policy or position on how to tackle bullying are those that are most effective, and as a result, those the students that attend those schools have the best outcomes. Mm. So it's absolutely the responsibility of the wider community to take this issue off the shoulders of young people, because they have enough distress going on for them from a huge variety of factors that we cannot leave them to be tackling this on their own.
Leslie?
I agree. And, you know, one of the things Alana and Madeline, just as Headspace does, we work across Australia. And look, one of the things that's incredibly depressing when you look at schools and bullying, and we've all seen, you know, we got heavily involved in a situation with the young male student in Queensland who committed suicide last year. In Adelaide last month, a young woman committed suicide. We've seen a number of instances of self-harm by children who've been bullied. And one of the things that is just, it appalls us is that, do you know, most schools have policies, but so many schools do not have the resources and have not put the investment into the right training and practices to be able to follow through on those policies. One of the things that we talk about is that it's a postcode if you're a bully child in Australia. It's a postcode lottery. You're lucky if you're in the right school with the right training and systems in place. Now, I think we're really fortunate in Victoria. We've got investment in safe schools. We've got investment in e-smart schools, which has meant that the schools have got the right type of training and support to be able to respond. And we've seen, you know, significant improvements there. But in so many schools across Australia, they have good policies. They have almost no resources and no practices in place to be able to follow through. So students sometimes get a good teacher, but very often the teacher has no idea how to respond. And yet it's not rocket science. There's really good evidence about what you can do to intervene within a school, within a classroom around bullying in a very effective way.
Well, we're seeing now in Victoria that state schools will be taking on safe schools across the board. And I did an episode on safe schools a few weeks ago, and I spoke to a principal from a Victorian state school who was one of the first adopters of safe schools and has nothing but amazing things to say about it, because it is a very simple way of thinking of teaching acceptance and therefore eradicating bullying. And also, schools, obviously, of course schools want to support students, and kids have enough to deal with puberty. I mean, all of that is hard, is confusing and weird enough, let alone feeling, you tend to feel isolated.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
I don't know any secondary school teacher in Australia who would say, gee, I'm really well equipped to deal with the amazing hormonal rushes that happens with students from the years 7 to year 10. Because we all know, we've all been there and we've experienced it. Kids go through massive hormonal changes, and it affects their behaviour, their perceptions and their way of being. So teachers, they're not public health trained, but they have to deal with a range of things. Safe schools is one of the really important resources that gives teachers that confidence. I will say eSmart, which is the cyber safety framework that schools in Victoria, Tasmania and more than a third of Australian schools have adopted, also gives schools that sense of responsibility and being able to respond appropriately around cyberbullying in particular. We've seen significant reductions in cyberbullying when schools implement safe school, eSmart schools.
You're on The Informer and we're talking bullying in schools and online. Nick from Headspace, how do parents stay on top of cyberbullying?
Yeah, that's a really hard one. And I think it happens, so the ability to kind of tackle this effectively starts much earlier than, you know, when we're in crisis. So it's important to, when supporting children and young people who are developing their sense of online safety and developing a kind of emotional connections with their parents, to kind of have these conversations early, but also to have experiences where, you know, you can create an opportunity for your child to come to you when they're distressed and respond effectively in the real world, and also work together to share kind of some joint boundaries around, you know, how can you be safe online? What do you do if you're having an experience that you're kind of worried about or you're not sure? So you kind of have to start early. You have to start having a real kind of transparently agreed upon set of kind of boundaries for how it is that social media is used, and particularly when it starts to be introduced. Because I talked about earlier that nature of the relentlessness of the potential for online and cyberbullying, it being, you know, on a device at all hours of the day and night, and it's really important for parents to consider whether or not they might want to remove all devices after a certain time at night and not allow their kids to be online all of the hours of the night, because then it does become really difficult to try and contain. So,
Gee, Nick, that would be only thing I disagree with you about in everything we've said tonight.
Right.
Because my sense is that's the way that you reduce your child's trust now. I think taking the phone off them is like punishing them. I reckon there's a stronger message, which is you act the way you want to act with your child, and you model the sort of behaviour that you expect your child. I think that unfortunately, by taking phones off them, I suspect one of the things that happens is that kids get so resentful they don't tell you when something goes wrong.
Uh-huh.
Nick, would you like to respond?
I certainly appreciate there are different views on it, and I'm not trying to say that mine is the only view. I think with younger children, when they're building their skills and capacity to be able to do that, it might be a consideration. So I think we can agree on that point then. When introducing someone's skills to it, to put some boundaries around it, but it would be sensible to give them the trust to be able to respond appropriately once you've built their skills.
Yep. Oh, well, look, there's so much more to talk about, and we've barely scratched the surface. It's been an absolute pleasure to have Nick from Headspace in and Leslie from Lana and Madeline Foundation. It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you guys so much.
It was fun.
I hope that we can continue again and maybe have another chat. Obviously, it's such a complex issue. But hopefully, if there's any kids out there listening, they know that they can go to those places online if they need help. And there's amazing organisations, QLife, Switchboard, Lifeline, all those options are there. Also, go and talk to your teachers. I guess
you're not alone.
You're not alone, and let someone know. Because as soon as you let someone know, they're going to help you. This has been The Informer.
Thanks very much for having me on, Dan.
Thanks so much, Nick. And this is The Informer on Joy.